T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome back in. So it's never good when your title fight doesn't come off. And that's what happened on Saturday. UFC, what was it?
213.
And how long was it before the scheduled fight that Nunes pulled out, Amanda Nunes pulled out? It wasn't long.
From what I understand, it was right before the fight was getting ready to start.
Yeah, I saw it online. I think it was a few hours. She cited chronic sinusitis. Yeah.
Sinusitis? What is the heck is
that? I don't know what that is.
I've had sinusitis a bunch of times. It's basically a sinus infection.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's what Dana... See if you think Dana White threw her under the bus. UFC president. Here's an interview he did before the event, right after learning about all this over the weekend.
Well, yesterday she started to not feel good. We took her to the hospital. Dr. Davidson, who is, our doctor here in Las Vegas, who's fantastic and handles all the fighters, did a full evaluation of her. And, she was medically cleared to fight. So she did the weigh-ins yesterday. She made weight. She weighed in at the ceremonial weigh-ins yesterday and squared off with Shevchenko. Then went home last night. This morning, she called again and said she didn't feel good. So they brought her back in and started running tests on her. She said she didn't want to fight. She didn't feel good and didn't want to fight. She was medically cleared to fight. She, was checked and everything was fine, but she said she didn't feel right.
Okay, so the main card starts tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern without her. That's 3 hours and 18 minutes away. But apparently one person has thrown their hat in the proverbial ring to replace her. I want to go through a little Twitter message here, Dana, then we'll get your response. Young Jacek said, I spoke with Dana White and the UFC. We're going to try to make this fight happen. And then young Jacek basically said, I got to cancel some plans with somebody I had for Monday in New York because I'll be doing a victory tour after I finish off the match against Shevchenko. And then Shevchenko saying she's ready to go 100%. Let's do it today. You're the guy that makes it happen. Is there any chance, young Jacek, could this happen?
I wish I was the guy that could make that one happen, believe me. So this morning when this all started going down, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, who is our 115-pound champion and is an absolute stud, started terrorizing me for this fight. She said, I'll step in. The only problem is that, the fight's at 135. I probably weigh a couple pounds over 135 right now, but I'll take the fight. I want the fight. Make this fight happen. And, I was like, I can't throw my 115-pound champion in with this 135-pound woman who's had a full training camp and is ready to fight. Even though I love and respect Joanna Jędrzejczyk so much for stepping up and even considering doing this, we couldn't get it done as far as her medicals and all the things that need to be done.
All right, so they couldn't do that. That was just crazy, right? They were never going to do that.
It would have been awesome if they did, because it would have helped the card for sure. Mm.
So how did you even watch this, did you?
Well, I didn't get home till around midnight, which would have been plenty of time, actually, to watch it. So I didn't know till I got home. I watched the end of the Overeem-Verdum fight and then got ready to watch the next, which would have been the co-main event. And then I heard them talking about it. I was like, really?
Yep. Yeah. So now the plan, last thing White said was to move Shevchenko and Nunes to UFC 215, which is in Edmonton, Canada, September 9th. So maybe they can pull it off then.
Well, I'm seeing things that he said he will never let her headline.
Yeah, so what do you think of that? Is he done with her, Dana White?
It sounds, what would you do? I mean, you're cleared to fight.
Medically cleared, but if you don't feel it, if you feel poorly, do you want to go out there and get your head beat in?
Here's the thing. I felt poorly this morning. I feel poorly right now when I'm here.
You're not fighting. Nobody's going to punch you, I don't think.
If you have sinusitis and you get punched in the face, does that hurt?
basically, you got a snotty nose. It's good. I mean, your nose is already hurting. Well, there's more to it.
All right, so you think she should have fought?
Yes, I do.
That's what you're saying.
I do. I think she ducked it.
And so if Dana White is critical of her, you're okay with that?
I have no problem with it.
Yeah.
Because you spend a lot of money billing. So it isn't like she got hurt. She was medically cleared, and she decided she didn't feel well, and she didn't want to do it. What's going to happen next time he gives her top billing? Would you give her top billing again? There's no way I would.
Do you have any history of doing anything like this?
No, she's only been champion for she's had a couple title fights, so she hasn't been around enough to have a history, I guess.
This is the one where we were supposed to have on the show, and then they canceled it, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So there you go.
There's a cancellation.
There's your answer right there.
Yeah. Well, I don't think she did that. I think they her handlers did that. But I mean, what about, why would she do that? That's what I'm trying to get at. Why would she pull out? Why?
Well, there are a lot of
really,
reasons.
Really sick.
And some of it is, like I said, maybe she's ducking the fighter, thinks she's going to lose. Maybe she's a prima donna and thinks she can fight whenever she wants to fight. I mean, we know there are some egos in the game.
You do get some head cases in this sport. You do, don't you?
Get punched in the head a lot. That might happen. I don't know. She seems to me, I don't know her, obviously. She seems to me like someone who has an attitude.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that might play into the reason why he will not put her up there again.
Mm-hmm.
And he seems like he has a little bit of a temper.
Well,
so.
Dana has an ego, for sure.
Yeah. Well, it hurts your product when that happens. Yeah. I mean, it's not like, you know, she broke a toe or something. I mean, you could understand that.
Right. No, I know. And last minute, you know, there's nothing you can do about it. And, you know, so I understand where he's coming from.
If this would have been someone like Conor McGregor or something, think of how everybody would have been.
No doubt.
If you're buying this fight, it's just because you love the UFC. It's not because of her billing.
Mm-hmm. You don't get a refund, do you?
I don't know. If they ask for it, I would think if you asked for it because it was billed one way, I don't know how that works. There may be some fine print that says, you know.
I doubt that they have to.
If
they might
choose to.
If it says
card subject to change, then you have no standing.
I'm sure it does.
It probably does.
Yeah, that's the typical thing. All right, keep an eye on that and see if Nunez does get back on a card here anytime soon. And watch her a little.
She's going to have to. She's a champion. Unless they're going to strip her of the championship, she's going to fight again.
Right. He just won't. I mean, what's he going to do? What's his choice? He's got to put her back up there.
He could put her on the prelim on the free TV. He could definitely do that. I mean, you know, it's like probation. It's like putting someone on probation.
Yeah. Well, that'll learn her. All right. Chris Sale will be the first pitcher to make consecutive all-star starts representing different teams. He's now with the Boston Red Sox. And he'll start tomorrow night for the American League. And Max Scherzer will start, Washington Nationals pitcher for the National League. When with the Chicago White Sox, Sale pitched the first inning of last year's game in San Diego and allowed a two-out home run to Chris Bryant. And he was traded in December for top prospects. He'll be the 16th pitcher to make consecutive All-Star starts, the first since Arizona's Randy Johnson did it back in 2001, and the first in the American League since Toronto's Dave Steeb did it in 83-84. That goes way back. He was born in Lakeland, about 240 miles northwest of Miami. He's 11-4 this year with a 2.75 earned run average. Has 178 strikeouts in not quite 128 innings. This will also be the second All-Star start for Max Scherzer. When with Detroit, he pitched a perfect inning at Citi Field, New York in 2013. When Sale followed with a pair of 1-2-3 innings and got the win, Scherzer becomes the fifth pitcher ever to start All-Star games for both leagues. Vida Blue, Roger Clemens, Roy Halladay, and Johnson. Scherzer's 10-5 on the year. 2.10 earned run average, 173 strikeouts. Clayton Kershaw, you know, you wonder why he wouldn't start at 14-2 with a 2.1 earned run average, 2.18 earned run average. He started on Sunday, so he can't pitch on Tuesday. So All-Star game is coming up tomorrow night. In Florida, Major League Baseball's All-Star Game in Miami. So got the starting pitchers finally set up for that one. You can hear it right here on ESPN Upstate tomorrow night. Tonight you can hear the Home Run Derby. 8 o'clock is the airtime for that, and that should be a lot of fun as well. 844-GSP-ESPN, text line 71307. A bit from the commissioner of the SEC, Greg Sankey, when we come back. SEC Media Days, talking season, as Steve Spurrier calls it.
Yeah.
Underway in Alabama, in Hoover. That's next here in the Huddle on ESPN Upstate. Stay with us. The Huddle on ESPN Upstate. Greg McKinney, J.C. Sherbert, and Lonzo in here on Monday afternoon, the 10th of July. Hope you had a great weekend. We're here all week. No holidays this week, right? Going to work every day this week? What's up with that? Need a Tuesday off this week, too.
I think he was asking you when he was... About
are you here all
every day this week?
I'm actually here all week this week. Awesome. Believe it or not,
just looking that direction. Right?
Unless I get a
unless you get an offer,
get a part in you know the Top Gun 2, uh-huh. Which is awesome that's coming out. By the way,
yeah,
well, it's funny because you know Val Kilmer and Meg Ryan are both you know you can't put Anthony Edwards in it because Goose died, so you have to have a flashback if Goose is going to be in it. But mm-hmm. Goose's wife Meg Ryan and Val Kilmer, of course, are still kicking around. But both have had terrible plastic surgery, so they don't even, I mean, they look real freakish.
Yes.
And so I wonder how they're going to handle that.
Yes.
Are they going to have Meg Ryan and Val Kilmer in it or not? Val Kilmer's been telling people he's in it.
Maybe Iceman crashes into Meg Ryan's house.
And has to have plastic surgery.
They explain it away that way.
The big explosion changed her face. See? She's got to think a little bit out of the box there, Jason. Mm-hmm. 844-GSP-ESPN. Got a tweet of the day for you now in the Huddle on ESPN Upstate. So the tweet of the day is a two-word tweet, basically, from Xavier Thomas. You know who he is.
Oh, yeah.
Signed with Clemson. Came down to Clemson in South Carolina. What's he ranked? A number whatever recruit. Top couple of recruits in the country.
He's number two, right up there.
So the SEC Network, because of SEC Media Days getting underway today, they tweeted a video of fans cheering and the excitement on SEC football. And the SEC Network tweet said, "Brace yourselves, SEC football is coming." And Xavier Thomas just retweeted that 2 hours ago and said, "ACC better." I like it.
ACC
better. ACC better. ACC better.
It's very caveman-like. I mean, I'm just saying.
It was last season.
Uh-huh. You can make that argument, and he's feeling it a little bit. Go for it.
Not going to be that way this year. Xavier. I don't know what happens with Clemson and South Carolina when they play, but I think conference-wise, you're going to see the SEC swing back up this year in the ACC. We'll take a little dip just because, I mean, you lose all those quarterbacks in that league. I mean, there's question marks at some of those spots. And the ACC has had a good run of quarterbacks. We talked about Jared Evans, and he was one of the better quarterbacks in the league last year and was kind of an unknown. So you throw him in there, and Brad Kaya, we mentioned, is gone.
Yep.
Nathan Peterman, who was much better than anybody thought at Pitt last year. Those are Deshaun Watson, of course. So those guys are all gone. It's kind of DeAndre Francois and a bunch of unknowns, so we'll see. In fact, NC State, who Carolina plays to open, with Ryan Finley, that's probably one of the better returning quarterbacks in the league.
And the SEC has 10 quarterbacks returning who started at least 7 games last year.
Yeah, and then Stidham's an 11th that was really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and I guess Malik Zier's Florida's situation, their guy that started last year probably isn't going to start. But, there's a lot of returning quarterback talent. And I'll tell you this, there has not been this type of quarterback depth in this league in about 3-4 years. I mean, it's been a while.
Yeah.
And it, you know, the play at that, I mean, you know, you think about last year in the preseason, Greg, we were like, who are the best quarterbacks in the SEC? Well, Josh Dobbs and Austin Allen from Arkansas gets no respect. He was probably the number two guy. So you kind of just kind of look at it. I mean, there were people last year that had Drew Barker from Kentucky as the second best quarterback. Yeah. He didn't even make it out of the first year. So I think this year let's say it's more stable in the SEC at quarterback heading into this year. There's more stability. That usually equals a little bit better product top to bottom. And you know, there's question marks in the ACC at that spot just because there were a lot of really good quarterbacks that left. That's just kind of the cyclical nature of it.
Yeah, there's definitely more talent and more excitement at the quarterback position in the SEC this year than there has been in a while. 844-GSP-ESPN. Let's get Billy and Taylor's in next. Talk a little college football with us. Hello, Billy. What's up, man?
Hey, what's going on, guys? How y'all doing?
We're doing good, man. Hope you had a good weekend.
Very well. Listen, I've always felt like, well, JC, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I know you're not a big NFL guy, but you definitely know who gets drafted. I've always felt like outside, especially, let's say, the last 3 years, because you keep on hearing the comparisons, and I don't think you could go deeper than that because clearly the SEC was better more than, you know, 3 years ago. But if you take quarterbacks away, am I not wrong in saying that the SEC still has more overall drafted talent than the ACC?
Yeah, overall, the numbers are usually – and I'll say this, though. Even when the ACC and like, I think when Clemson – let's see, 2012 and 2013, you know, I thought the ACC was just, you know, garbage. I mean, not Clemson, not Florida State necessarily, but the rest of it was just inconsistent. And those programs in that league, they always are in – this is what baffles me about it, because they're always inconsistent. Yet they'll have three or four guys drafted every year out of the member schools. And I think those numbers are skewed a bit because Miami – even through their struggles since they've joined the league, they still put a lot of guys in the NFL in the draft every single year. And so I think that's kind of skewed those numbers. But the ACC, typically, even if they're not the second best league on the field, they're the second best league as far as producing NFL draft picks.
Yeah, and there's no doubt about that. But, I mean, this whole theory of the ACC is just as good, if not better, than the SEC is just a bunch of garbage. And I'm not one of these, you know, let's pound our chest about conferences, but you know, the amount of players that you put into the league says it all. And I mean, to me, that's the bottom line, and you can't argue with that. And the difference is not the top. I think the top three or four teams in the ACC could compete with anybody, including the top three or four teams in the SEC. That's been proven over the last 3 or 4 years. The difference is the middle and the lower tier teams, and you know, there's a lot of teams in the SEC that even Vanderbilt puts one or two guys in the league, and I'm not sure that you can say that at Wake Forest or Duke. I mean, that happens occasionally, but not all the time. But I don't remember too many years where Vanderbilt hadn't had one or two guys drafted. So, to me, that's one difference. And to me, the biggest key difference, and I've always believed this, and it's not just a 4 or 5 year thing. I think this has been throughout my lifetime. If you start looking at venues, because I think home field advantage matters, and I understand what Greg was saying about, you know, well, last year they were playing in Auburn, and this year they're playing in Clemson, because Clemson's got an SEC atmosphere. So does Virginia Tech, so does Florida State, and sometimes so does NC State. Mm-hmm. Outside of those three or four schools, if you start looking, how many schools do you go to, honestly, Greg, where in the SEC, where there's not a great atmosphere? Now, you could say Vanderbilt or Kentucky, and maybe that's it.
Kentucky, actually.
State, but they've got a great atmosphere.
Yeah, Kentucky's
and
good.
I know the talent wins, but, you know, you get sometimes talent doesn't always show when it's in front of 70, 80,000 screaming fans. I mean, that makes a difference. You don't know how these kids are going to react, no matter how good they are in those atmospheres. And I've always felt like that the thing that separates the SEC from everybody, except for maybe the Big 12 on that, is atmosphere, but especially in the ACC, because there's not many SEC atmospheres in the ACC.
Yeah, and I would throw the Big 10 in there, too. You know, those Big 10 schools are all big, gigantic schools. They got 50, 60,000 fans. And, you know, even Northwestern gets 40, and they're pretty rabid. When they went to the Rose Bowl a couple years ago, you couldn't get a flight from Chicago to L.A. So I would say that, yeah, it is. And then that's the problem, is that if you look at the ACC top to bottom, you do have your Boston Colleges. You do have your Dukes. And Boston College is a tough place to play, and they're little – hardcore band of fans support them pretty well, but it's in Boston. I mean, ask any Clemson folks that have been up there, they can't believe it. You know,
well,
Duke,
you know what, Jason,
North Carolina.
I was at the North Carolina, South Carolina kickoff last year, and there was a lot more South Carolina fans there, and their fans were more laid back about football than the South Carolina fans was. I'm telling you, the South Carolina fans was a lot more rabid, and South Carolina hasn't had a lot of success in the SEC, so that just shows me the huge difference in fan bases, and I think those things matter. Anyway, I'll hang up and listen. Appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, I'm with you right there, and if you go top to bottom, I mean, Vanderbilt does not have what I would call a rabid atmosphere. You know, Missouri, to me, is kind of an average Big 12 atmosphere. The rest of them, the other 12, including Kentucky,
yep.
they get 60,000. They get 60,000 in there.
Yep.
You know that they support it, and the ACC. But you know, if you look at the makeup of the ACC, though, Greg, one of the most historically successful programs in that league is Miami, who we've been talking a lot about today.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of atmosphere do they really have there when they're not playing Florida State? You know, you have a lot of private schools. Pitt is a private school, and the Pitt fans are hardcore, but there's just not a lot of them. Syracuse, same way. It's a private school. So, you do have some issues. You know, Louisville, they got a great atmosphere, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Which is it's amazing that we've been talking about football atmospheres, and we mentioned Louisville and Kentucky as good. You wouldn't think that because they're hoop schools, but they're actually good.
Right. Greg Sankey, opening the SEC media days today, pointed out that the SEC has still won 8 of 11, I think is the number now. National championships. But he had to back off that number a little bit after last year with Clemson winning it, so the number wasn't quite as impressive, but he did talk that up. And then he went through a whole long spiel about 60s history in the SEC, a bunch of Kentucky stuff. But he also paid tribute to South Carolina in his opening remarks today.
In April of this year, I saw an incredible picture of what Dr. King described in his observation, that we're caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. It was April 9th, a Sunday. I was invited to join in the parade in Columbia, South Carolina, celebrating the Gamecocks National Championship in women's basketball. And as I rode through the parade, you can imagine there was a smile on my face for two reasons. One, knowing the SEC had the two teams playing in this year's women's basketball national championship game, Mississippi State and South Carolina. But the other reason was because as I rode through that parade route and looked at the people cheering, what I saw were in the crowd men and women, young and old, all different socioeconomic statuses, black and white, all different ethnicities, all joined together in celebrating their team. And that celebration concluded on the steps of the South Carolina State Capitol, where 2 years ago, through the leadership of many in that state, and following a tragic shooting in a Charleston church, the Confederate battle flag was lowered and removed from the state capitol grounds for a final time. The result is opportunity for young people. When last March, the SEC and the NCAA returned basketball tournaments to Greenville, South Carolina. For us, the first time since 2005 that had occurred. It should also not be missed that when an African-American woman, Dawn Staley, stands on the steps of that state capitol as the coach, joined by her team, with throngs of fans recognizing her leadership and the achievement of that team. She's there not only as the coach of the Gamecocks, but also of the United States women's basketball national team. It's then that we understand that whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly.
So a little tip of the cap to South Carolina and to Greenville from Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, in his opening remarks today as the SEC Media Days got underway. 4 days of this stuff, by the way. Why can't they do this? And we got three coaches today. We're still waiting. Orgeron's finally up. The second guy is finally up on the podium today.
Monday
and it's 3:30 in the afternoon.
Thank everybody helping make it. We have some good crawfish down in Louisiana.
And then we'll get Jones, Butch Jones, after 5 o'clock this afternoon. Why only three coaches a day?
The champion of life, Butch Jones.
Yeah. Why can't we do this in 3 days?
I think they have four on the other. They go 3-4-3. I think 3-4-4-3.
They have 4 days.
Three.
Yeah. Yeah.
3-4-4-3. That's 14. Yeah. They have 14 teams now, Greg.
I know. You could still do this thing in 3 days at the most. You could. Don't tell me you couldn't. Why do you have to wait till noon to start today? Why couldn't they start this morning at 9 o'clock?
You're not going to let the guys sleep in? I mean,
come on.
They're going to be busy soon, so let them rest a little.
Yeah.
Man, this is a nothing burger you guys are talking about here. You can tell it's July 10th.
You think it's fine to have 4 days of SEC Media Day? You're good with it.
I don't have a huge problem with it. Let them enjoy it. I mean, they need a week of – the reason it's 4 days is because they went to 14 teams and have a network now. So the network has programming all 4 days. Then next week, everybody's got the takeover day. One school takes over day. South Carolina's on July 19th. They're going to talk about the Final Four and the women winning it or whatever.
Yeah, Greg, okay? You're complaining, and there's nothing going on right now. And then, so at least we get something every day.
Then practice starts 10 days after that, and so you don't have to sit there and preview it. Now, to me, SEC Media Days used to be sort of mid-July-ish, maybe the 15th through the 20th. And what I used to do, I'd go and I'd fly out to the Elite 11 in the opening. And then I'd fly back to Birmingham for SEC Media Days. And then I'd have one more event in Orlando, which was hot as crap, like a 7-on-7. It was called, Quarterback Kings or something like that. And then that would take me up to August 1st, and then football practice would start. So it was great. My life in I was never home in the month of July back when I was doing national recruiting because I didn't want to be. Because I was waiting for football to start, practice. And then you have practices, and then you have something to talk about. Now,
should we apologize?
This is really early. No, this is really early, okay. And I have to sit around, and, I've got to go up to Pigeon Forge this weekend just to kind of get my mind.
Nice little retreat.
Yeah. Pigeon Forge will not get your mind right. I'm sorry. It will not.
Get your mind right.
Hey, there's also some whispers going on about moving SEC Media Days to Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. What do you think of that idea?
To the stadium?
Yeah.
The Media Days?
Yes.
Why?
What? I'm looking at a story from the Post and Courier right now.
75,000 seats or 65,000 seat stadium for
All
Media
Sankey
Days?
Said today, Greg Sankey said, we're here for now. We're here now. He didn't say for now. We're here now. That's it.
I'm all for moving it to Atlanta, but I mean, the Georgia World Congress Center to me would be, which is near the stadium, but I wouldn't move it to the daggum stadium. I mean, that's a little opulent, don't you think?
Maybe a little
overkill. This brand new gigantic stadium, we're all just going to sit in here. I mean, can you imagine Ed Orgeron giving a press conference in like the stadium? All you'd be hearing is,
I'm sure they have conference rooms. You don't have to put them down on the 50-yard line.
I mean, you got the Georgia World Congress Center there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a nice conference area.
The Falcons president, Rich McKay, addresses SEC Media Days tomorrow on behalf of Mercedes-Benz Stadium. What does that mean?
That may mean.
Atlanta's a good place to have it, though.
Listen. If it were in Atlanta, we would be there probably, at least for the South Carolina day or something.
Because
you can go down and go back in one day. There's tough to do in Atlanta.
Yeah.
They have the College Football Hall of Fame. It's where they have the basketball media days in Charlotte for whatever, because SEC Network's there or whatever. But I'm all for that. I mean, look, man, Birmingham, and I love Birmingham because of the people, because the state of Alabama is a lot like our state. You know, it's college-oriented, Roll Tide, War Eagle, whatever. And I love Birmingham. I have a lot of friends there. But, man, you're talking about media spending 4 days in Birmingham versus 4 days in Atlanta.
Yep.
You don't have to ask me which one I'd rather do.
Well, what they're talking about doing is doing some kind of a fan fest. So, make the whole – just deck out the whole Mercedes-Benz Stadium for SEC football and bring fans in and everything, not just a media event.
Well – all right, fine, whatever. I mean, what are they trying to get people exposure to the stadium? Because the Falcons have $2 hot dogs next year, Greg. To me, that's going to do more than bring an SEC fan. What, are you going to let Ole Miss fans come over there because they've never been? Get a little taste of it, Vanderbilt.
Here's what it's like.
Come on.
All right, we got to hit a break. 844-GSP-ESPN, text line 71307, the huddle on ESPN Upstate. Update the Sports Center we just had. Rafi Nadal has lost. He's out at Wimbledon. Giles Mueller, 15-13 in the fifth set in the fourth round at Wimbledon. So Nadal goes down. Big news out of the Wimbledon Championships 2017 there. 844-GSP-ESPN. Text line 71307. Ed Orgeron still speaking. What I'm seeing, JC, on these Twitter accounts of what he's doing, we haven't been listening to him from SEC Media Days, is that he's filibustering, that he's going through his entire depth chart, position by position, maybe so that there'll be less time for questions, you think? That's a strategy.
That is a strategy. That does happen at times.
You just spend all the time talking, take up all the question time, and you say what you want to say. And he has not ripped his shirt off yet.
Of course not.
Which he once did in the USC meeting room out at Southern Cal.
You think his hair is real? This looks like
Ed Orgeron. Yeah,
yeah. It's
There's nothing about Ed Orgeron that's not real. It's got
Eddie Munster feel to it.
He's one of the greatest guys in the game. And when I was covering recruiting, he's one of the greatest guys I've ever met. I mean, super guy.
Mm-hmm.
That's high praise.
He's got this personification. You know, this persona about it. People are like, Ed Orgeron. Yeah, but he's really a nice guy. You know, there's a reason he recruits well, because he is really good at building relationships.
He says Arden Key, who wants a South Carolina commitment, defensive end, is not going to be ready for camp. His injury is under rehab right now, so that's a little bit of a setback. That guy, man, what if South Carolina had gotten that guy? And they had him, right?
They wouldn't have pass. They had him up until toward the end.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have pass rushing issues. And that actually was the it was Orgeron, when he came to LSU as the D-line coach, immediately got in on him and turned him.
Mm-hmm.
If it weren't for him, he may have ended up at South Carolina.
Yep. Anyway, he's hurt, but one of the key players. He should be ready for the season, they think, but not ready for fall camp. Mm-hmm. He's gone on for about 15 minutes now. Talking about the depth chart. That's all right. He can. That's all right. 844-GSP-ESPN. Let's go back to the phones and talk to Tom next in Atlanta. Hi, Tom.
Hey, guys. So you were talking about Calipari earlier, I think, on JC's Hot Takes and Sausage. I couldn't call in because I had a client come in at the last minute, but it just got me thinking about a rant in my head that Calipari is one of the most overrated coaches in college basketball. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's kind of a hot take, but he's obviously a great recruiter. He knows what he's doing on the recruiting trail, but the only national championship he has is when he had a generational talent in Anthony Davis. Mm-hmm. Now, who has dadgum Roy Williams won a championship with? He won one with Sean May, Tyler Hansbrough, Justin Jackson. None of them were top 10 picks in the draft.
Mm-mm.
But, Calipari is over here with the U19 team losing to Canada. So, granted, they have R.J. Barrett. He's a great player. But it's Canada. We should not be losing to Canada. And the only reason we did lose is because he was more focused on playing his recruits than he was on actually, playing the best players available.
Mm. Did he do that? I didn't watch any of it.
Yeah, that's been a criticism. Mm. North Carolina's played for the national championship 2 years in a row. They played Villanova 1 year, Gonzaga the next. How many one and dones do all those teams have?
Zero. I'm sorry, Tony Bradley was one and done.
Okay, yeah. He was a one and done. But that was North Carolina's first in like how many years? Six, seven?
Their last championship was in 2009, so it's been 8 years.
Yeah, so come on,
but, man. Yeah, no, it's ridiculous. And Tony Bradley, he shouldn't have gotten in the draft. He should have stayed another year, I think.
Oh, but there's no question he may. Yeah, but look, the point is in college basketball nowadays, one and done is a unique thing for Kentucky and maybe Kansas. Everybody else, you need players. And it doesn't. And when you got Calipari coaching, it doesn't mean team success. I mean, really.
No, it doesn't. I will say he is great at recruiting,
mm-hmm.
but you can't develop a player in 1 year.
Nope.
What does daggum Roy Williams do? He develops players over the course of 4 years. That's how he wins championships.
Yep, agreed.
But, yeah, so whenever I talk about Calipari, I get pretty heated because I think he's a used car salesman, kind of sleazy. But, yeah.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate it, man. Got to hit our last break. 844-GSP-ESPN if you want to get in. Final call for phone calls on this Monday huddle on ESPN Upstate. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's the final segment of the huddle here for Monday afternoon on ESPN Upstate with Greg McKinney, J.C. Sherbert, and Lonzo. By the way, Brett Bielema butt-dialed Commissioner Greg Sankey. That story's making the rounds today. You might call it a pocket dial, but I like butt dial.
Yeah, butt dial sounds better, more official.
He said right after the birth of his daughter, Bielema had a baby daughter on Saturday, he was walking out of a restaurant getting some food for his wife, Jen, who's the gorgeous woman that he's married to.
Yes.
He looked down at his cell phone, and he saw the name of Greg Sankey. He said, that's pretty cool. He picked up the phone. That's actually a FaceTime request from Greg Sankey. He said, this is pretty cool. The commissioner is FaceTiming me. That's unique.
So he FaceTimed his butt to him?
No. Sankey said, why are you calling me? And Bielema said, I must have butt-dialed you. He FaceTimed. Yes, he butt-dialed FaceTime, I guess.
On iPhone, you hit the button for FaceTime is the near the button for call.
Yeah.
And so if you're butt dialing anything, chances are you are going to FaceTime. That could be dangerous. One time in my early stages of my second dating life, I was in the bathroom.
This sounds like a Leslie Nielsen story.
And I went to
sounds like something we don't need to air.
I went to text a lady friend of mine and accidentally hit the FaceTime button. So imagine what I did. I just took the phone and like sent it over here. It was like, I mean, I was like threw it in the at that point. She didn't pick up FaceTime anyways. You know what that was. At that point though, if that happens and she picks up, I would just throw it in the toilet and go buy a new phone.
Yep.
Phone's if I done. Cared that much. If it's somebody I didn't Phone's care done. About, oh, I'd just sit there and roll. Hey, yeah. I'm FaceTiming you from a commode.
Yeah.
I have people. My wife does that, accidentally FaceTimes me all the time.
From a
From there.
Well, good.
I mean, you know, I don't, my wife, I don't pick it up.
You just said my wife does that all the time. I'm like, wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, she just passed out.
It's easy to do. I think I've done it once.
FaceTime. And it's kind of cool, though, because when somebody's trying to FaceTime you, it does say FaceTime audio.
Mm-hmm.
And like, can, I never pick that. I have no interest in FaceTiming with anybody. And I just I assume it's a butt dial, and it normally is.
Mm-hmm. You just ignore it. Make it go away. Decline. That's the move.
Let's start FaceTiming him all the time.
I think I will.
I think we'll do that.
All right. Monty Lee, Clemson baseball coach, announced his signing class today. 13 players have been signed to Clemson baseball after Monty Lee's second season as the head coach there. He congratulated his head coaches, or his assistant coaches, rather, in helping them bring these guys in. A couple of notable signees. Three signees were selected in the June 2017 Major League Baseball draft. Sam Weatherly was drafted in the 27th round by the Blue Jays. Let's see, Meredith. Which one is Meredith here? I'm going to go down through the list. Keir Meredith, an outfielder, was drafted in the 28th round by the Cubs. And in the 35th round, the Indians took a Clemson signee, and that's Spencer Strider, who is a first-team All-American. They also have in this class a young man named Majowski, who is the son of Magic Man, former Green Bay quarterback.
Dan Majowski, I remember him.
Don Majowski.
Well, Don, Dan, same thing.
Don passed for 12,700 yards and 66 touchdowns with the Packers, Colts, and Lions between 1987 and 1996. And his son has signed. Bo is an outfielder now with the Tigers.
He was the quarterback before Brett Favre.
Yes, Magic Man.
He was pretty good.
They had a couple good years under Majowski.
Yeah, I don't remember.
So his son is there now. So anyway, they got 13 signees. 12 of them will be freshmen in the 2018 season. A couple other guys. They've got Bryce Bowen, who is a left-handed pitcher and a first baseman. They've got Bryce Teodosio, an outfielder and left-handed pitcher, so he can play two positions. So you got some of the combination pitchers and position players for the Tigers. But they feel pretty good about this class. And again, three of these guys drafted in the Major League Baseball draft this year. So you got to like that. And I assume the decision has been made that they're going to come on to Clemson. So that signing class of 13 players, Monty Lee says, is a very exciting class. And says they've signed upper echelon players from states like South Carolina, North Carolina, Georgia, Virginia, Tennessee, California, and Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
So he's recruiting all over the country, really.
Well, yeah. Monty Lee's a good recruiter. He knows what to look for. These guys are all going to fit into the program. They're all probably talented. And I think he's going to continue to upgrade that roster. And I think at that point, you're going to see him go a little further in the NCAA tournament. I really do. I kind of feel like even though they've had good pitching and they had Seth Beer, they still have Seth Beer. I mean, I tend to think they've really sort of bottom line overachieved the last 2 years relative to their talent. And I think it'll only go up from here, in my opinion.
Yeah, no doubt. So congratulations to the Tigers on that signing class. And that will wrap it up for the huddle on this Monday edition. Home Run Derby tonight, Aaron Judge versus Giancarlo Stanton and others. So Judge. That will be 8 o'clock on ESPN Upstate. All-Star Game is tomorrow night. We'll be back here tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock. The coach, Josh Phillips, sitting in for Sturgis next. For Lonzo and JC, I'm Greg McKinney. Thanks for listening to The Huddle. Have a great Monday afternoon, and we'll see you tomorrow.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.